Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Good morning once again, and this is Coach Chuck Creasy for another week of American Tennis. Every week, every Wednesday, 12 o'clock to noon Eastern Standard Time, you can tune into the UR Tennis Network to get American Tennis. That's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S. The UR Tennis Network can also be found on your regular iPhone where they do the podcasts. You can just go to the UR Tennis Network and you can find every show that we have had. Also, go to chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net, and go to the blog. You can get every show that we have done over the last 2 years on the UR Tennis Network. If you'd like to call in today, the call-in number is area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. And you can talk to our guest today, or you can make some comments or on whatever topic you'd like on tennis. Our mission, though, on the UR Tennis Network and American Tennis each week, we ask you to stand up and to speak out and encourage others to do so as well. We really need your thoughts. We really need your ideas. Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people to do nothing. We don't need bureaucracies or bureaucrats or big organizations to always tell us what to do. They can help with how to do some of the things. For whatever reason, we are getting to the place now with all the computers. I bring this up every week that, you know, I've always said that too many computers allow Barney to run Mayberry. We need Andy running Mayberry, where Andy gives people the latitude to make decisions, to do things on their own way, and to be free to do it. That's the nature of things in the United States of America. But even in tennis, we have a situation where we often dictated to, and, you know, that just curls my skin, folks, from you know, every bit of my fiber rebels against being told all the time what to do by people. I'd like to be sold on what to do and encouraged what to do, but we have the freedom in the United States to be entrepreneurs. And we have the freedom in the United States to go out and to tackle things and to put more energy into it than anybody else could do on our own ideas, because there are ideas. And now, what do organizations do? Organizations help us with incentives. Organizations help us in doing things. The opportunity part of anything is needed. We need help from organizations. But we absolutely need to be supplying maximum horsepower on our own. So that's why we say that all you need to do is just stay professional, address issues, not people, and you can say pretty much whatever you want to in our country. That's the nature of the United States of America and the freedom. We're going to be doing in the next 3 to 4 weeks, folks, shows on the great American tennis entrepreneurs out there, and we have many, many entrepreneurs out there. I mean, I'm just off of the top of my head, I'm thinking Dennis Vandermeer, my golly, he's taught tennis all over the world, and his system has not only taught tennis all over the world, but it has employed hundreds and hundreds of people. Dennis Vandermeer, and you know, he's got a very, very interesting story. Now, he's been ill for a while, but I think of him, he comes to mind. I mean, everybody knows about Nick Bollettieri's tennis academies, and how many tennis academies have we had grow up in Florida and other places around the country because of what he started in the 1980s, the late early 1980s and late 1970s. I have some very, very good friends. Lenny Sloss is over here across the road in Charleston, and he's just came out with a wonderful tool called the iCoach, and it could revolutionize a lot of teaching of tennis here. And it's a different thing. It's completely different than what I've seen in the past. It's completely unique, and I see what he does with this, and I'm dumbfounded at the improvement that a lot of kids can make and coaches, just looking at the game a little bit different way. But we need these entrepreneurs. And one week we had Coach on here just talking about the importance of Skip Fosbury with high jumping and the Skip Fosbury flop, and the fact that all through the ages, every tennis player's had a little bit different strokes and things, and that tennis is not a cookie-cutter sport. So as my intro has gone on and on and on here, I'd like to introduce our guest today, and I'd like Aaron Fox, I believe, is on the line. Aaron, are you there?
I'm here.
Aaron, I'm going to tell the story real quick about meeting you, and then sort of you can tell everybody the story of the last 7 years, your quest here. But it was about 7 or 8 years ago, I guess, that I met you for the first time just in passing down at Vandermeer's, and we were there for the PTR convention. And you had something that I had not seen before. You had this little brochure and these little different colored grips out, and you were sort of we just sort of met in passing, but I was curious, and I remembered the great Clarence Mabry, who coached at Trinity. I heard a speech of his back in 1980, and he said the most important quality of a championship tennis player is the hunger of an inquisitive mind. And I've always tried to look for things like yours, things like Lenny Sloss's iCoach, things like Mike Springlemeyer, you know, who came out with a new racket a couple years ago, and he's had inventions like the tennis seat, the miracle cloths, all these different things. I mean, the Dennis Vandermeer's, John Eagleton right now, we've had him on the show. He came out, he's got a new thing called the tennis tech system. But the curiosity of just wanting to know what you were doing, I think, has led to a very wonderful friendship, and I thank you for that. but you were there promoting the GRIPS program, G-R-I-P-S, GRIP. It's gripsprogram.com, correct? I got the website right there. But could you go back and sort of tell us about yourself, but walk us back through that journey that, you have had as an entrepreneur with Craig Cigarelli out there in California and in some of the work you're doing. So I'm gonna sit back here and listen a minute. So go ahead, Aaron.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. It was about 7 or 8 years ago, I guess, and we ran into each other at the PTR symposium, and that was at the beginning of my journey with the GRIPS program. And I remember it was so funny because I think you thought I was selling grips, like actual grips for the racket. And as you learned a little bit more about what I was doing, the conversation continued. And what grips is it is a tennis tool similar to karate. So players advance levels white through black, and instead of getting karate belts, they get grips for their tennis racket, white through black. And basically, over the journey of the last 7, 8 years, it has evolved a ton. We have a junior grips program. We have an adult grips program. It's like I said, it's evolved a ton. It has gotten better and better. It started because we had a student, Craig Signorelli, and I were working at Riviera Country Club in California here. And we had a student who wanted to be in the next level, the next class, and came up to us. The mom really wanted to push him to the class, and we said, no, he's not ready. And so she, of course, was a little upset at our judgment call and said, that's not fair. You can't say that. And I was like, well, yeah, we know. This is what we do. And so Craig had the idea to write up a little skills test and to, give this boy Todd that test. And said, okay, listen, if Todd passes this test, he can be in the higher class. And if he doesn't, he's not ready. Do we all agree? And the mom said, yeah, of course. That's totally fair. So went out and gave Todd the test, and he did not pass. And went through and showed skill for skill why he wasn't ready to be in the next class. And away went Todd and his mom. But the surprising part was, of course, that he came back 3 or 4 weeks later and said, I'm ready. I wasn't there, but Craig was like, what? I didn't see this coming. And mom came up to Craig and said, stop. I just want to tell you that whatever happens, if he passes or if he doesn't pass, I really need to thank you. Because the last 3 to 4 weeks, Todd has worked harder than I've ever seen him work. He's been out there working on his forehand and his backhand, all of the skills that you had written down, because that's what he needed to do to move up to the next level. And Craig took a step back and kind of realized the light bulb went on. He went out and gave Todd that test, and Todd passed. And he felt great because it wasn't about lowering the bar and making it easier for Todd to get in, or, mom complained. And so he said, yeah, and he let Todd into the class. And everyone was happy. So that was the beginning of the journey of creating these levels for players to move through one at a time, and sort of dangling the carrot out in front of the player and getting them to improve. So that's how it started. And like I said, that was 7, 8 years ago when I first met you, and now we're much further down the path, and it's a lot of fun. And but that's basically where we started from.
Well, I want to go into your 7-year journey here in a second, Aaron, but a couple things pop out. First of all, the first barrier was the fact that Craig had enough guts to tell this Riviera Country Club mom that, no, your son didn't pass. He didn't pass, go home. Most people would say, whoa, wait a minute, you just lost a client. I've even seen this lately where pros are sometimes calling students clients, but people would say, whoa, that's stupid, you just lost that $120 an hour lesson or something like that. That's the first thing that pops out. He was not into just someone participating. He was basically doing what every great teacher does, and that's speak to the king or the queen in our boys and girls and try to stretch them. The number two thing was him not lowering the bar of his standard, which so that he had some success and got some participation advancement. Okay. The next thing was he recognized the difference between performance and participation, which we are not doing with our youngsters. But the biggest thing is how this brainstorm started. Every entrepreneur has a light that goes off in their head and they say, wow, this is it. This is special. I'm going to talk, I'll have a commercial later in the show where I promote, Aaron, my momentum control program. We're doing it at a camp here at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, December 2021-22. But since 1979, I had a similar light go off, and I recognize momentum is the key to every sport, and I've been on a quest to do it. But the point is, you guys, the light went off, and you said, this could be big. This could revolutionize everything. Now, what I'd like for you to walk now through the seven-year journey and talk about some of the ups, but the downs, and also the difference in philosophies around the world between a socialist country or maybe even semi-communist country versus some capitalist countries and different things that have worked. So if I've set the table there, I'm hoping I set the table a little bit for you. I'm encouraging entrepreneurs from now until Christmas to go after it the American way and with freedom riding on our coat sleeves. Talk to us about that first year and that second year and that third year, et cetera.
I'd love to. The topic of entrepreneurism is so great. And it kind of takes me back to the first stage of this, of the light bulb going off and having the idea and putting one foot in front of the other. And I mean, just to back up for grips for us, it's like the first thing, you have an idea and, you know, 90% of people don't do anything about it. So you get past that first threshold, right? And your idea turns into something tangible and substantial. And then you've got,
did it almost go away? I don't want to interrupt you, but did it almost go away? I mean, there had to have been a thing where you went to lunch that next day, you said, nah, that won't work, that will work, and hey, what would we do? Did it almost go away, or did it just stay steady?
Yeah, I would say that is right in line with what you said about Craig holding his ground when the mom came up to him and he didn't give in to her. Because when you have an idea or you have a passion, there is a line out the door of people who are going to tell you why you can't do it, you know, and the line of people who are going to tell you you can do it is so small. And basically, I think most entrepreneurs know that there's value in what they're doing, in their idea, in their business, and those people that do it, they just know. And so, I mean, I think I've had tons of moments over the journey where you're physically tired. I mean, I remember, this always comes to my mind. One time, I had an issue with the program. We launched our first huge club in Dallas, Texas. And I was on another trip after that, and I flew into Houston. And I got in the car the minute I landed in Houston, and I drove 4 hours to Dallas, and I sat down with the director of tennis, had a 30-minute conversation, got back in the car, and drove another 4 hours back down to Houston. So I literally drove 8 hours to sit there and have a 30-minute conversation with the guy to solve a problem. And we've talked a lot about the passion and really what fuels people and business and entrepreneurs. And, you know, you have to be ready and want to do those things, you know, go to the end of the earth and back, as you say, in order to make it work. And so I think there's been a lot of times when people have, you know, said, you know, what are you doing? Or this isn't right, or that's not right. And it's kind of like there's a piece of like a slide or of art that you see on social media, and it says, what people think success looks like. And it's that 45-degree line, you know, from left to right, going straight up. And then the next side says what success actually looks like. And it starts off and it goes up and down and left and right and all over the page and finally ends up, you know, in the top right-hand corner. And that's the reality of what the journey looks like. And it's kind of like if you get knocked down, you just got to get back up. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, yeah, I've had tons of moments where you feel like, oh, man, is this right? Should I be doing it? You know what? I know better, and I love what I do, and I wake up every day, and you know, I get out of bed, and I jump on my email, and I, you know, because it's what I want to do. You know, my day off, I mean, well, first of all, what's a day off, right? I get up, and actually today's my day off. and I get up, and I get to the computer, and I start working on it because it's what I love. So I've never questioned that in the beginning. If you're thinking about starting a business and it's something that you love, you will quickly understand that you don't give up, you don't give in. It's something that you continue to do because you have the passion for it. In those first couple of years, it's definitely learning. It's nurturing. It's growing. It's taking something and turning it into something great. You know, and then in my situation, you wake up one day, or I woke up one day, and we had a business, and it was fueled by the passion of what we were doing, which is, you know, our mission really is to make better tennis players and athletes. But of course, sort of the sneak attack there is that we get them to do it with by having fun and doing work that they don't even know that they're doing. That's what I love. Once we got going and we had something where we had clubs around the country starting to use the program, you know, we continued to develop it. Years three and four, back in year two and three, we took our first website and we expanded it and made it, you know, into a really killer website with a lot of educational tools for parents and for coaches and for players. Years three and four, we got into the 10 and under tennis with the red, orange, and green balls. And one of the problems that coaches face was, how do I know when to move a player from red to orange to green? And so we wrote a junior grips program, which had kids as young as three and four and took them all the way up until they had the skills in which they should move on to the yellow ball.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Bing, ding, 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 ding. Okay, you know where I'm going here. USTA says age.
Right. And it's
okay,
kind of
wait a minute. Wait a minute, we're not going to make this kumbaya, let's all hold hands here a second. USTA says age determined. You're saying skill determined. Any problems here? Can we go there?
Yeah, let's do it. Listen, I think starting with age is fine, ending with age is bad, because what you do is you draw a line in the sand and you say, go, and kids are going to jump over that line. And if you don't draw that line in the sand, they aren't going anywhere. The first time I set the criteria down for our junior black grip, the USTA said, whoa, whoa, you think that these kids are going to be able to do that? And I said, of course they are. What do you mean? It didn't even occur to me that they thought it was tough, which, by the way, of course it should be tough. You know, and in terms of age and in terms of skill, we have, like, that black grip level where they said, whoa, you think kids, you know, basically 11 and under are going to be able to do this? We've got kids that are 9 years old completing this program that are ready to move up to the yellow ball. And heck yeah, they should be. Of course, I mean, I use 10 and under. I use red, orange, green, but I, of course, give them the pathway to get out of it if they want to develop the skills and to become competitive tennis players. And it's what you said, speaking to the kings and queens, you know, in kids. And I promise that if you give them that opportunity to jump over that line, you will get a lot of kids to do it. And guess what? Once you've got one or two or three kids doing that, the other kids are going to start to follow. So
I love loaded language because it's how we remember things. Age-related versus age-determined. Would you say that is what you believe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Age-related, not age-determined. And the reason I like loaded language, my whole life I've done this, whether it was the way I grew up or what, but I remember, you know, commercials, dang, Pepsi Cola hits the spot, 12 full ounces, that's a lot, twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi Cola is to drink for you. Okay, a nickel, okay? Now, wait a minute. You know, I mean, I can go on. Brush. That's your new iPad. You know, I mean, I can go on and on and on, Craig, but we remember things that have emotional attachments, and we have things, jingles, rhymes, and all those things. That's why I'm so big that, so look, can we do age-related, not age-related. I'll come up with some kind of a thing, but, you know, the question is, to me, I mean, it's just the reason I love having you on, I'm going through this next month of entrepreneurism, is because I am beside myself at the control that is trying to be exerted from top down. And it's happening now. I say we have a civil war going on in college with whether it's USTA, NCA, ITA exerting. I mean, the ITA right now, I'm just so upset with them. And dang, I'm in that Hall of Fame thing. They'll probably throw me out. But I'm so disappointed in these learned, smart people that are imposing their will on people, on these coaches, and not giving people freedom. So anyhow, I got off on a tangent there, but age-related, not age-determined, will come up with a jingle that hopefully 40 years from now, 50 years from now, people can remember. But talk about, if you had any pushback from the USTA and the green ball stuff and things, have they tried to shut you down or anything?
No, because I think everybody really knows that what we're doing is good. And I've literally gone through the entire Junior Grips program with USTA officials. I won't name
Glad
them,
to hear it.
And they literally said out loud, you've ticked every box that we would have in a program. So there's nothing official from the USTA. But, yeah, of course. And you know, it's all in there. And, you know, recently at a 10 and under seminar, someone said, how do we move kids from red to orange to green? And he kind of responded, well, I think Grips has sort of done that. And, you know, the truth is, it's all there, and the proof is in the pudding.
Good, good.
And, yeah,
good.
So the pushback, it's not so much pushback. It's a more matter of, you know, how much are you going to help us promote this thing, which is great? I mean, at one point, I had somebody in the USTA literally say to me, this is so good, but I don't know how we would promote this because we didn't
good.
Come up with it.
Good.
Just started laughing.
Well,
and,
you know, this is encouraging, Craig, Aaron, this is encouraging because I've always said there are good people in these bureaucracies, but, you know, it's irritating when they force feed things, whether it's our school systems. Oh, my God, what is going on with this Common Core curriculum? The dumbing down is beyond belief. It makes No Child Left Behind look like kid stuff. And what are we doing with this force feeding of mandating 10 and under tennis and this and this and this? But here's what I came up with, and tell me if this makes sense. I've always said we have very, very good people in these organizations, and many of them have reached out to me. I'm so glad to hear that they are, and I think there's a whole different attitude with the USTA right now. But here's what I realized. I've got a couple rebels on my team. I've got one guy that's really a rebel. He's a gunslinger. I mean, I tell him, you're a Ferrari. You're always in the shop with your hood up. You know, you're always going to be, you know, but you got this Ferrari engine, no steering wheel. And, you know, years and years ago, a wise person told me, with this stallion that you have, you cannot win the Kentucky Derby with plow horses that only do what they're supposed to do and don't live. You have to have a stallion, a racehorse. Now, with that, every strength is a weakness. Every weakness becomes a strength. It's the paradox of talent. And this person said, always, no, I know where it was. Now, I remember James Dobson, the strong-willed child. I read this, it's probably been 30 years ago. He's in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Focus on the Family, James Dobson. In the strong-willed child, it said, mold the will, but never break the spirit. So what I'm thinking is that these bureaucracies don't know how to manage a Aaron Fox or Craig Cigarelli, where mold the will, but don't break their spirit. Don't break them down. You know, so anyhow, that's okay. Just I'm so glad I remembered, you know, where I got that. But I've used that forever and ever. You know, I get a kid right now. Go ahead.
No, it's true, and there's so many people, coaches out there that want to get up and do something and make a change. And I had a conversation with somebody 2 days ago, and it was about, okay, what you've done is so great, but if, you know, the bigger guy comes out and does something, there's going to be so many more people that just follow. And I said, please stop talking. Listen to what you just said. I need you. I need you to get off your butt and to help me, because otherwise all of these people with great ideas that come out and are trying to make a difference, they don't get anywhere, and every single person counts. And, you know, you're so right about the spirit of tennis coaches, and I often think that, you know, if you don't feel like you're a piece of the bigger puzzle, what's the motivation to get out there and to participate? You know, and I do believe that people need to, they need to listen to themselves. They need to be fueled by themselves. Help from organizations is great. But, you know, you can't, if you're going through the motions and you're not excited about what you're doing, you're definitely doing the wrong thing. But if you're excited about what you're doing and you feel like you know, what you have to contribute doesn't matter, of course you're not going to feel motivated. So back to your point, what you were just talking about a little earlier about like communist countries versus capitalist countries, I literally just got back from a trip from Costa Rica, and I was in the middle of the jungle with no cell phone reception, no computer, no nothing. And you fly. I woke up on Monday morning. I woke up and I was in San Jose, Costa Rica. And I landed in Los Angeles, got my car, and went straight to the tennis court. And it was a really surreal, bizarre experience. But you can feel the entrepreneurism and the spirit of America. All you have to do is get out of it for a second and step back into it to feel what you're living in. And I think that tennis is no different. And a lot of us, you know, we love it so much that, you know, we just sometimes forget where we're at, and we need to take a step back and, you know, get motivated to get up and to, you know, make a difference. And of course, you know, have passion about what you're doing. So, you know, I'm off on a tangent now.
Well, no. That's exactly where I want you to go. That's we want the tangent. It's easier to tame roaring tigers than inspire timid pussycats. We need people. Every man that's ever worked for me, another person did this with me, and I've always done it for everybody that I hire. I said I would always rather give you forgiveness than permission. And people go, oh, don't people make mistakes? Yes, they make mistakes, but they'll do 10 mistakes and get out of those things, three of them turn out good anyway, and then they get two great things done. Whereas if you tell them don't make mistakes, it's like a tennis player say don't make mistakes. You want to see somebody play bad? You tell them don't make mistakes. Everybody knows.
Right.
You know, to Harry Hopman, you say hit for the lines. You know, I tell them hit him in the belly. You know, deal on or you get dealt upon. You know, and you have all of these sayings. But you're going to love this. Okay, so I've got a young man on my team. He's a gunslinger. And I'd taken over the job this year. I didn't learn anything. I wanted everybody to have a clean slate and everything. But you sort of, people show who they are. But I've learned a long time ago that you've got to have that person that is willing to match point down, you know, swing for the fence. You know, you can't have a person who's just afraid of making mistakes when you're match point down. So anyhow, here we go, Aaron. So I'm telling them, meet everybody at the track at 4 to run. We're doing a team run because I wasn't there, and here's what you do. So he sends me back this email, this text to say, hey, Coach, you know, my flight doesn't get in till 3. I know I'm missing class a day, and I have a meeting till 4:30 today. You know, so, okay, this is the kind of thing, you know, that sort of happens here. So here I go. I say, look, man, here I text him. I go, run on your own. Go 40 minutes. But why are you late, huh? But I love it, man. I put here, there, and I put, you are an outlier. You're not a common man. That's good if you're not too high maintenance, but it's pretty bad if you slow the train down. You know, so, and then the kid gave me, but you know, there's where you are now. Here's what I think happens. I think that people who are in charge of whether it's USTA, whether it's the ITA, whether it's a school system, whether it's No Child Left Behind, whether it's a leader or something, but leaders who impede the development, individual initiative of people who are afraid of mistakes, who want it their way, who are control freaks, really they dumb down everybody and everything. And I here's the thing I've said so many times, and Aaron, I've always said that rules and restrictions and too many guidelines never keep dishonest people from breaking rules. It only stimulates the levels of deviance. Like, we've got more cheating in tennis than we've ever had, and we got 28 officials running around, you know, and we've got all these we never had cheating like this when we had no officials, when it was the own individual, that it was their own morals, and there was their own credibility on the line, their own reputation on the line. But the point is I believe that we get afraid that if we don't show control, we won't have control. The paradox of leadership, though, is this, and then I'll let you go here with this, is that the ultimate control is to give up control, and the ultimate leadership is to empower those who are under you. You know, the key to power is empowerment of those who are under you. And if you do that, you get loyalty, power, entrepreneurism that goes through the roof. So, man, I just had a light bulb go on, and I'm realizing that these bureaucracies like a USTA, and God bless those people in there. I've got 3 or 4 former players that are doing a wonderful job there. And, I mean, I got a guy, Bill Mountford and Scott Schultz, and these guys have been so kind to me over the last couple years with you know, they get it. They understand that, you know, that I'm, you know, I'm passionately care about our country and our in what's going on. But the point is you're locked into this bureaucracy, and if a teacher doesn't promote out of the box thinking, you get nothing. You know, but you have to be, I think, brave enough to do it. And so that's my little oration. So,
well, I have to jump in because there's just so much. There's so many ways to go with this, right? But I think that the big theme is that as a culture, we've become paralyzed, and we've become paralyzed by the bureaucracy and the top to down. And, you know, what made America great back when we were building this country is what you said, people swinging for the fences and taking risks and chances. And you have a huge company like Groupon come out, and then they do huge, huge numbers. What happens? You get 20 knockoffs of Groupon. Or the tech bubble that happened, where you've got tech companies that are valued at astronomical valuations, hundreds of millions of dollars, that have no revenues. And then what happens? You have a whole slew of people trying to create the next one, and they're not creating unique concepts and ideas. And that's the problem. And it goes all the way down to the school system. You know, the level of our students used to be lower than where we were and the leaders around the world, but we would have some students that were still at the top levels. Like the few students at the top of the Americans were still competing with, you know, the top bright minds around the world, and that is not the case anymore. And I think it's exactly what you said of it's a cookie cutter system where creativity is not promoted. Following is what's promoted, and it's the same thing from school systems all the way up into businesses, and you see it every single day. And like I was saying, with those tech companies and just businesses, that's not going to get you anywhere. If you're doing something that other people are doing, there's not an opportunity. If you really want an opportunity, you will make your own path. And so it's so exciting, even when you're talking about iCoach and, you know, Bolotary and Vandermeer and all of those things that people are doing and did. They did that because they saw a path, not because they were following somebody else. Backing up even just to the GRIPS program and the GRIPS challenge of what we're doing, if you're following what somebody else is telling you to do, and that's what you live by, that's your theme, you should think about that, because the idea of what we're doing with GRIPS, with the tests and the challenge cards to move from one level to the next, I never knew we were doing something that somebody had done before when we started. But other people have done things like that. There were USGA cards. Somebody said one time that GRIPS is like the USGA cards on crack. And I didn't know what we were doing. I just knew that whoever created the USGA cards probably said, hey, this is a good idea, and they did step one, and then we came along and we loved what we were doing. And we would do things like drive from Houston to Dallas 8 hours for a half-hour meeting to make it better. And so we did steps 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down to step number 10.
Stop there. Explain why somebody else will not copy what you're doing right now. Explain why.
I don't think there's anybody out there who loves what I'm doing the way that I do. It's my baby. It's mine. It's my baby. Because I created it. I'm not doing it for somebody else. I'm out there. It's what you say. You need people out there with not responsibility, but the opportunity to create something. If I get up in the morning and I start working on my GRIPS stuff, I will put in 5 or 6 hours, and I will probably work harder than most of my friends do in a week, because it's mine, and I'm not going to the office and punching in and punching out and, shopping online and doing all these other things, because it's mine.
Well said. We're going to commercial. We'll be right back. This is Chuck Creasy and Aaron Fox. It's fantastic. We'll be right back. It's American Tennis. Folks, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and tennis is absolutely a crazy sport. One day you're drinking the wine, next day you're picking the grapes. It is a roller coaster. Once I heard that it was sort of like chasing a cat. If you try to control the game, it'll run. If you sit down and relax, sometimes it comes and jumps in your lap. This is all because of the power of momentum. Momentum control is the most powerful force in sports. Since 1979, I've been on a quest to find ways to control momentum. I have it now, and I have had it for a while, but I've got it in a simple to understand system of 8 rules. These 8 rules, if you learn them, you will be able to control the power of momentum. You can control the power of momentum on the tennis court. You can control it in the business world. You can control it on the basketball floor. You can control it on the football field. You can control momentum in your life. If you'd like to learn about this, contact me at chuckcreasy.net. I'll help you learn the power of momentum. Chuck Creasy, coach at chuckcreasy.com is my email. Chuckcreasy.net is my website. Have your youngsters come to the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, December 2021-22. Go to my website, chuckcreasy.net, and sign up for the camp we're going to have there and learn how to control momentum. It is absolutely the most powerful force in sports. Each and every one of us, and as coaches, we need the freedom to be entrepreneurs and to try new experimental ways of teaching to get our players down the road. And Aaron, I've always said that we really don't need systems as much as we need just simple incentives and encouragement. And the incentives come, you know, I heard one time that people work for six different reasons, Aaron. It was, financial reward, material reward, appreciation, association, self-improvement, or service to others in the highest calling, service to others and teaching and, you know, and being a doctor, nurse, or those things like that. But you were on fire for the grips. And I look, the first time I met you is contagious. I walk by you, it's like a magnet. I gotta talk to this guy. He's on fire. It's more than just doing a job. And what we just ended with is that it's not like other people can say, whoa, they're going to make $1 million here. I'm going to go out and copy their GRIPS program. I mean, you can't do anything except fake something there, and people read right through it. But this passion that you have, you know, talk to us real quick. Teach us about the passion. Have there been any times where you just said, look, I've had enough. That's it. I'm out of here. I'm having to travel thousands of miles. It's not worth it. Have there been those times, too?
Yeah, man. I saw you in 2009 or something. I went down to the teachers' conference down at the Australian Open. And afterwards, I stopped on my way back to the U.S. I flew through Auckland. New Zealand was one of the places on the planet I wanted to visit so badly. And it was cool. I got to go to New Zealand because of all of the work I'd done, and I got to speak at the coaches' conference down there in Australia. And I remember, I don't know if I told you this story, I rented a car in Auckland at the airport, and, you know, I'm driving on the right, a stick shift in the middle. So
bad thing, drive on the right.
The wrong side of the road. I was a disaster. And I just remember there was so much going on at that time with GRIPS. And I was a little bit overwhelmed, and I just needed a deep breath. But I'm driving up the coast of New Zealand. And, you know, it was one of those moments where I was alone. I could really take a deep breath. I could take a moment and think about what I was doing. And it's when you get backed into a corner, what do? There was no doubt in my mind that I wanted to continue pursuing what I was doing. It's what makes you stronger, you know? It's great champions. You don't remember the match that they win in straight sets, you know, with one or two breaks. You remember when they were down 2-1 and they came back and won, or when they faced an incredible point that they won. And that's because they realize in that moment that that's what they want to do. So, I mean, I've definitely had those moments. And, you know, you kind of, you're running along and you're in the fog and you're not really sure where you're going. And I promise when the clouds break and you take a look at, you know, what you've done, you're just, it's so rewarding. And I think, you know, I told you that we just shot our first episode of our TV show, which I'm super excited about. And, you know,
tell us about it. Tell us about it. Come on.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
I mean, it's taken us 7 years, but here we are. We turned the Grips program into the Grips Challenge. We created a cool app where coaches can enter results on their phone so that there's no maintenance or administration. You can just enter scores. And it allows the coaches to interact more closely with their students. It strengthens that relationship. When I enter in a result, let's say I give little Johnny 3 out of 10 skills on the red grip. I give him those 3 skills during class one day. When I enter that result, an email with that challenge card, the updated progress, gets emailed to the parent. So there's that feedback to the parent. So you're strengthening that relationship between coach and parent. The players are more motivated. So all of this kind of was happening this last year. And I thought, wow, you know what we should do? We should take the exact same thing that we do with Grips. We should turn it into a game show. And so I remember I was on an airplane, and, you know, I always have good thoughts when I'm alone and I'm on the airplane, and I get off the plane and I called up the guy at Tennis Channel. I said, I need to come meet you. I've got 5 minutes. I just said, all I need is 5 minutes. And I went over and I said, man, listen, here's what we're going to do. The first round, it's going to be a game show. The first round is going to be a buzz-in trivia. We do knowledge in Grips, you know, and that's the first round. It'll be buzz-in trivia like you see on Family Feud. The second round will be physical challenges, like the show Double Dare, which was a popular show in the 90s where kids and families would do these crazy physical challenges. But it's great for tennis because we're working on hand-eye coordination and just footwork and things. And that'll be the second round. And the third round will be actually tennis competition, and the teams will play against each other. And if you win, you know, more points in those 3 rounds, you go on to the grand prize round. And that's what we did. We created the Grips Challenge game show with those 3 rounds, the buzz-in trivia, physical challenges, and the tennis competition. And the team that wins moves on to the grand prize round. And it's, you know what? It's kind of what I was saying before of our mission of it's like a sneak attack. You do more work because you're having a really good time and you don't realize you're doing it. We have these families in the first episode, and they came out and they competed and they had a blast and we had tons of laughs and we had epic points where players ended up on the ground with their arms and feet sprawled out and, you know, just high-fiving and parents and kids working together and just, you know, having a good time. So that's what we did, and I'm excited, and like I said, we shot that first episode, and it will premiere during the first week of the Australian Open on Tennis Channel. So you have to make sure that you check it out.
Oh my golly, gripsprogram.com for everybody out there. Gripsprogram.com, correct?
You got it.
and here's the thing, and I can't keep harping on this. There's a couple things that pop out so distinctly to me because we've all been there where we've lost tennis matches that crush us and we want to sell our rackets or throw them away or break them and we want to give up. And then we go, no, we love it too much to do that. The pain, the bad pain turns into good pain, doesn't it? Good gain.
Absolutely.
The pain turns into gain. And you said that you were sitting there in Australia or in New Zealand just saying, I do this because it's what I do and it's what I want to do. And if it makes me famous, fine. If it doesn't, it's what I do. And that's the beautiful, beautiful, brilliant thing you're saying, Aaron. And go ahead.
I just wanted to jump in real quick because, you know, I live in L.A. and it's Hollywood, and I have a good laugh. Everybody that's out here in L.A. wants to be an actor, wants to be famous. And the problem is they're trying to be something or do something instead of getting caught doing what they love. If you get caught doing what you love, you will be successful because you're doing it regardless of other people's permission, and then you'll have a good time.
You know, freedom makes eagles. Freedom, in telling people, go get it done. Show me the hill you want me to take. Don't tell me how to take it. You know, go get it done. And people work for me just that freedom. I want them to say, okay, I'm free to make mistakes. I'm free to screw up. As a tennis player, I'm going to make errors. I've got to play with passion, though. But freedom makes eagles. The problem with control is we make pigeons out of eagles sometimes. And the terrible, terrible tragedy about making pigeons with too much control, you end up making pigeons that will peck your feet when they're not getting fed right. The tragedy in our culture is that we have all these mechanisms for control now. We have the videos, and we have the iPhones, and we have the computerization, and we have order, and we have control, and we have this and that. And this is not a game of control. Tennis is the most fantastic game ever made, because it is not a game of control. It's a challenge between two people where once the ball crosses the net, you have given up control. You go from offense to defense to offense to defense to offense. You give control, my side control, his side control, my side control, his. There's no other sport like this. You know, maybe boxing and things. But the point is, Aaron, and I hope that people are getting this. We only got a few minutes. I'm going to get you to say one or two more things. But I'm hoping people understand that, you know, you better make errors and do them with gusto, and all errors better be aggressive errors. And daggone it, you better go after those nine things wrong to get one right. And when you get afraid of making mistakes with your life and you don't go for it, you're done. You might as well pack into retirement. So give yourself a plug. You got about 2 minutes here. Tell people just real quick how they can support you, and talk about, you know, just give us the how-to real quick here.
Sure. Yeah, if you're interested in the GRIPS program, you can go to gripsprogram.com or gripschallenge.com. Shoot me an email, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at gripsprogram.com. And basically, I think the thing to do is to tell me a bit about yourself and your facility or what you're doing. And we probably have something that will work for you with your programming and your situation, because not everybody's the same. You know, we've got clubs that run grips. We've got individuals that run grips. If you're one guy or girl on a court, which is what I, you know, basically like I do in Los Angeles, you know, it can work for you. And the thing that you're going to love about it is that it brings you closer to your players and gives great feedback to the parents. So, you know, if you want motivated students and you want them coming to you asking you to work on their backhand or their serve because they got to get to the red grip, and you want to have fun doing it, this is a good
And your kids will be on fire, because mine are on fire to go out and play on their own when they're chasing down a grip instead of some type of method or perfect way of doing anything. And I want to say hats off to people like Aaron and Steve Bellamy. My golly, what an entrepreneur there. And Peter Burwash and Ashley Hobson in Atlanta, and John Eagleton and Dennis Vandermeer and Lenny Sloss and Mike Springlemeyer and Ken Brody up at the JTCC, Vic Braden, Cody DeCaza, and all the tennis people that your entrepreneurism and your individual thinking and being an eagle made things great, you know. And so next week we have a great one on. We have Patrick Barthay, who College Tennis Online, and he's going to talk to us next week, folks. And I wanted to thank you very, very much for coming on today, Aaron. You know, God bless you.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix with W.
said, you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. And folks, Aaron Fox out there with Craig Cigarelli, it's thank you for being on, Aaron. God bless you. And folks, we'll see you again next week with American Tennis. See you next week at noon on Wednesday. God bless you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.